So who is the creator and how far back can we track him? We'll talk with Marshall about that and take your phone calls when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back with Marshall Klarfeld. Marshall, eventually, if you go back far enough, you're going to get back to the creator. Whether
that's right,
it's, you know, someone created the Anunnaki, somebody created the creator of the Anunnaki, and you go back and back and back. But how far back do you think you have to go?
I think to the Big Bang, George, the creation of the universe. I mean, you know, it all started then. And I think the, nobody can explain what there was a millisecond before the Big Bang. So when I asked Linus Pauling, Professor Pauling, I said, you know, do you believe in God? And he told me, he said, we have to explain everything that's going on in the universe up until the present. But we go back to the beginning, which is the Big Bang. And he said, Marshall, if you ask me what there was a millisecond before the Big Bang, we don't know. You want to believe in God? Please do. I take that as my answer, George.
Well, and it may be the answer, Marshall.
It may be. I'm not sure.
I mean, God could be consciousness, right?
Absolutely.
And however it worked, however it put it all together, we just don't know.
It's the unexplained, George, and it's they had it. The Anunnaki obviously never solved the riddle, so their deity is the creator of all.
But chasing these mysteries, that's the fun part.
Yes, that's what I did. I mean, the mysteries of the Great Pyramid at Giza and the zigzag wall, George. You know, the zigzag wall?
Yeah.
Everybody's had all kinds of theories about that.
Yeah.
The washboard theory fits right in there. It's a vertical washboard.
Well, something happened on this planet a long time ago. You know, I always used to think, Marshall, that it was also possible that we had, you know, like Michael Cremo believes, that we had humankind around hundreds of millions of years ago, and maybe we were so advanced and we killed ourselves and we blew ourselves up and killed ourselves. That's also an interesting possibility.
Yes, that's very possible. I don't exclude any of the theories that are out there. I just kind of like to hang on to something that I can believe in myself, and Sitchin's theory of the Anunnaki. And, you know, we're like a 7-Eleven, George. I'm sure that the Anunnaki weren't the only space-age civilization to drop in here. There's evidence that there are probably others. But the only robust written record we have in those cuneiform tablets that I can put my hands on and look at and say, yeah, okay, this is a story. It makes sense to me, George. That's all I can say.
Well, this must have been one of those planets that they found and went, oh, my gosh, look at this one.
We would do the same thing, George. When we're out, we become the advanced space age species that I envision we're becoming. We're going to explore the solar system first and then the universe. And if we come across a little blue dot planet like ours, we're going to go down there and take a look.
Wouldn't it be great to find an Earth-like planet with creatures all over it?
Well, you know what Feynman told me? The law of probability.
Yes.
He said, Klarfeld, when I asked him, I said, do you believe in UFOs? He said, Klarfeld, I believe in the law of probability. There are 200 billion stars like ours in the Milky Way galaxy, and there's 400 billion galaxies in the universe. And the law of probability tells me there are 10,000 solar systems exactly like ours with a third planet that has life on it.
Well, they just found a planet bigger than planet Earth that's a diamond planet.
Yes.
How'd you
yes,
like
I
to
mean,
put that on somebody's
finger? We're on the beginning of understanding what's out there, George. It's huge. And I believe in the law of probability, like Feynman taught me. And I believe that there are, you know, we're the youngest. Our star is only 4.5 billion years old. The universe is 14 plus billion years old.
Somebody
so
had
we're the youngster on the block.
Yeah, somebody had a jump start on us.
Yeah, you got it.
All right, let's go to the phones. Final hour. Josie in Richmond, Virginia is with us on the wild card line. Good morning, Josie.
Hello. Greetings to you all.
You too.
I'm fascinated by past history or prehistory, and I have a little bit of tidbit for you, Marshall, that might be of interest for further research.
Okay.
It's this name you said. You mentioned the name Thoth, who is the offspring of Enki, I think you said.
That's correct.
And there's the name Thoth that crops up in Egypt, along with another little god-like creature called Pataki, who was the governor of New York. They're both Hungarian. Toth is a Hungarian name. So I'm wondering if there are these pieces of land from Atlantis to Egypt to Hungary, and I'm thinking that the Toths were there. It's a name common as Davis here, but they came from the highlands part of. In other words, they were. If they were escaping the sinking of Atlantis, they went to the high grounds. But anyway, I'm fascinated. I've gone to the museums. I've been to Egypt. I've been seeing a lot of these little god-like things. And the dwarf god was Ptah, and the ibis-headed god was Thoth. And Thoth was the master builder and a whole lot of good things.
Exactly.
And so when we have this thing that Atlantis sank and some went to Egypt and some maybe went to Hungary, and the name... Toth or Tot in German means dead, and I keep thinking, okay, the Egyptians, Book of the Dead, they were wondering where you went after life, and I thought, well, this is sort of all kind of interesting, and it's not a coincidence, George, right?
That's right.
So I'm thinking that it might be worth further.
Did I trace?
It might be worth further research into the.
Yeah, I traced it to the New World. In other words, when he got kicked out of Egypt, which he was, his brother deposed him. He was there for 1,500 plus years. He came over to Mesoamerica.
To Tula.
His name became Quetzalcoatl. Toth became Quetzalcoatl.
And he went to, and Tula was another place that was important.
Yeah, Tula is the city of Quetzalcoatl.
That was also connected with the Atlantis, was it not?
Atlantis statues sit on top of that pyramid. I've got a beautiful picture in the book. And by the way, those statues were buried inside the pyramid there, the Quetzalcoatl's pyramid. They dug them out, and they were cut in pieces and put back together. They now occupy the top of that pyramid in grand honor. But the interesting thing about the faces, none of those faces match any of our racial species.
In your research, Marshall, what's the most fascinating aspect for you? The fact that gold was mined by the Anunnaki planet-wide, or what else?
It's the connection, George. The connection of the gold mining and all of these physical monuments that we have inherited here on the planet Earth. In other words, I have 20 sites in the book that I picture and these two extra sites in the supplement, and there are probably dozens more. I have not ended my research on this, but the connection of gold and how it was separated from the placid river water is, to me, a new discovery that needs to be examined further. And that's why I bring in the book out. I think it's a brand new theory, and like all new theories, it has to be tested. And I think when the testing is done, it should hold up. I'm quite confident that this will hold up as a new discovery of the 21st century.
Super. Let's go next to Larry, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, Wildcard Line.
Good evening.
Hi, Larry.
I had a quick comment and a question. The comment is, anybody invoiced them yet for all the gold they've taken?
I was just thinking of that.
Okay.
at today's value, by the way.
Right.
Yeah, right.
My question is why did they pick that particular point of science and industrial evolution to leave us and not leave us as sort of an equal with electricity and anti-gravity? Why did they leave us at that point, where it's taken all this time to get to where we can almost just leave the planet instead of maybe blessing
it? Okay, Larry, here's the way it might take us. It's a good question. Time meant nothing to them. If you're immortal, you've got your hands full for thousands of years. You got to do some things. They did some magnificent things, and they knew that we would evolve into a space-age species because we have their DNA. In other words, we inherited... Everybody on this planet shares the same DNA, and we're going to become space age like them. And they assumed that they left us a few monuments, but that we would figure all these other things out. And we are. We are figuring everything out.
If Sitchin were alive today and he read this book, the Anunnaki were here, what would he say?
Good question, George. I wished he was here, and I wished I could share this with him because he touched on it in several books. The Beginning of Time and so on. He had some sites that I've quoted at the end of the book that I didn't include in the book, that Sitchin actually said, well, why would they put this in the front of the river? He said, you know, it doesn't make any sense that they put all these little chambers up in front of this river. They would have got flooded. Well, they were collecting gold.
Next up, Jacob, Yuba City, California, west of the Rockies. Jacob, you're on with Marshall Klarfeld.
Hi, George.
Hi.
Yeah, I just had a question. In Zachariah Sitchin's book, he describes that they were mining the gold to repair their atmosphere. And I was wondering if maybe that could be applied to our current situation with climate change.
You're right, Jacob. That's an excellent suggestion. I have actually forwarded that to NASA, telling them that, you know, if they really want to close our ozone leak, because we've got an ozone leak, flaking it with gold would be an excellent way to repel the sun from coming in and close that leak in our atmosphere. If we lose our atmosphere, we're cooked too.
We sure are. And you know what? It could happen.
It could.
Except we're not technologically advanced enough to go out and get gold from another spot.
You know what I asked Sitchin, George? This is just between us folks. I said, you know, was there anything else that they used the gold? They got a tremendous amount of gold, and I figure eventually they would have closed that ozone leak with the thousands of years of mining gold there. Were they ingesting it? I said, you know, I've heard these stories.
The white powder of gold.
White powder, yeah, there you go. Monatomic gold.
Yeah.
And I think that the people who do that, I've got a friend that's doing it, say that it's going to extend his life. It'll cure the DNA failings we have in our body. And I said, are you sure about that?
Supposed to be
incredible. I think
that's
what they did.
It's expensive.
All this extra gold that wasn't being used to. So I asked Sitchin that. This is great. You know, I said, hey, you know, what do you think about this? He says, the record speaks for itself. He wouldn't answer me.
How did, by the way, if they sprinkled pieces of gold in their atmosphere, how did it work? How did it help preserve the ozone layer? And why didn't it just fall down to their planet, you know, with gravity?
You can seed your atmosphere with whatever you want. These are flakes, powdered flakes of gold. And if you realize that our helmets on our spacesuits are plated with gold, it reflects the ultraviolet rays and all the damaging stuff that we need to protect ourselves from.
Right.
But also it's a reflector. It sends the rays, which are destroying the ozone leak, out back, and it closes. It heals itself.
What keeps the particles up there, or do they eventually fall down to the planet?
That's a good question, George. I don't know the answer to that.
Maybe they
had to keep seeding it. Maybe that's why they needed all of that.
Well, maybe that could be. Maybe it stays for a certain amount of time.
Good question, George. I don't know the answer to that.
Let's go to Paul driving in Minnesota somewhere east of the Rockies. Hi, Paul.
Hello, how are you?
Good.
Thank you for your show.
Thank you.
I have a comment and question for Marshall. I know you're talking about the series about the gold. I believe in the Bible, although there's a lot of stuff that I don't know exactly how it works. And in Revelation, it says that the streets of heaven are paved with gold. And, you know, a lot of people think heaven is just a place where we float along on clouds. But, you know, I believe it's a real place. And, you know, I'm sure it's huge, and if the streets are paved with gold, maybe that's for some kind of a power grid or something that would, you know, be used for
that's
that.
Excellent analysis, Paul, because we use gold in our computers. It's reflective. It's the only metal that is just as much air as there was before they took it all, because it can't be destructed. It's a non-destructive mineral. And if you start with some of it and you don't do anything to it, you're going to end up with the same amount. So I think you've hit on something. Gold can be placed in many places and used for many different things. We use it to protect our satellites from damage by ultraviolet rays and gamma rays. And we use it on our
satellites are shielded with it, aren't they?
That's absolutely, George. That's right. We have lots of, you know, it's got many uses. You can't eat it. That's one thing that
turn into the white powder, right?
Other than the white powder. But you have to treat gold to make the white powder, George. You can't just take and eat raw gold.
No.
That won't work.
No.
You've got to go through a chemical process to turn it into monatomic gold, which takes a little doing.
Let's go to Tulsa, Oklahoma. Tim's with us, first-time caller. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning. Big fan of the show. It's my first time calling in.
Thank you.
One of the things I wanted to talk about was that with our universe and being just immensely old and vastly wide and with all the galaxies and all the planets that are out there, you know, they just had the Kepler space telescope come back with images of thousands of Earth-like planets. You know, it would be an immense waste of space if we were the only ones out there. And with with our current focuses, you know, we've just launched the Mars rover, and that's going along well. And with all of the focus that is on commercializing space travel and environmental practices and things like that, along with December 21st coming up, there's an immense focus from the public throughout the world of what's going to happen on December 22nd. You know, is it going to be the coming of Christ? Is it going to be, you know, this stuff in Miami, the zombie thing coming back, or is it going to be aliens
Good question, Tim.
With all of that happening, could I'm looking at the greater picture, and could December 21st actually be one of the few moments in time where all of us, as citizens of this earth, are open-minded to what's going to happen, and could that be a prime time in our lives for first contact to happen, because we're all waiting to see what's going to happen? Could that be?
Yes. Let me give you the short answer to that, Tim. Actually, in a culture in South America, Central America, they Quetzalcoatl told his people, he said, you know, I'm leaving. The gold belongs to us. You can make instruments, you can make artifacts out of it, but you cannot keep it when we come back. It's ours, it belongs to us, and we are coming back. So the story is there of the return. Nobody's ever figured out, you know, when that's going to be. It might be the date that you're referring to. I personally think that the Mayan calendar, the marvelous, marvelous construction, like a slide rule, multiple slide rules, that gives an accuracy beyond any calendar that we've ever created here on our planet, was given to us, and it's in cycles. And the Anunnaki always spoke about everything is in cycles. It comes back. And this is the end of a 5,000-year cycle that started in 3113 B.C. when Quetzalcoatl landed on our shores. That's the beginning of that calendar. And the fact that it has many cycles in it, that this, to me, is just the end of one cycle. Whether they will return on that date, I can't tell you that, Tim. It's very possible.
Marshall, give out your websites and the book, The Anunnaki Were Here. Where do you get it?
Okay. My website is adamthemissinglink.com. That's adamthemissinglink.com. That's the name of the first book. And on that webpage, you will see the three books and a brief description of it. And by the way, we have a combo special on that page. You'll get, if you buy all three of the books, you'll get autographed copies, and it's a reduced price. It's a special at the bottom of the webpage. Also, I'm going to include, as I told you earlier, George, this new supplement that I've just created. It's 10 pages. It talks in detail about Angkor Wat, which to me was an amazing, amazing monument, and the Great Wall of China. That supplement will be included for the first 25 people who order the Anunnaki Were Here or the
super
combo.
Marshall, we're coming back for final phone calls with you right here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, it'll be Friday. That means we'll throw anything spooky your way, and then we'll have those Friday night into Saturday morning open lines. Who knows what'll happen there? We'll be back in a moment with final calls with Marshall Klarfeld on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, Marshall Klarfeld, our guest. Marshall, I assume we look just like the Anunnaki. I mean, identical.
Except for our height, George. Yeah, we're kind of miniature.
Smaller versions.
In other words, the books that I've read and the research that Sitchin gave us, they were at least 9 foot tall.
They were
these 12-inch high stairways all over the place. This is one of the keys that leads me to believe that 9 foot tall people can walk 12 inch high stairs.
They were the giants.
They were the giants, right?
Interesting. And did some of them, after they made us,
yeah,
did they mate with the women that they created?
Yes. We have what's called the giants of old. And they, you know, if you take a 9 foot species and you intermarry with a 5.5 foot species, which is what we were at that time, and you produce offspring.
We're a little bigger. Yeah.
We're bigger. We we see the story of David and Goliath. You know, Goliath was a huge person. He was one of these half-breeds.
Right.
And so was Gilgamesh. Gilgamesh was a huge person, much bigger than the humans that were in Uruk at 4,600 years ago. So that this breeding, they talked about it freely. In fact, it was one of the things that really ticked off Enlil. Enlil thought that his bloodline was being diluted by the Anunnaki males who were having offspring with humans, and he was quite upset with that.
All right, let's take the final calls. James in New Orleans gets us started. Hey, James, thanks for calling.
Good morning, Mr. Norris.
Hello, James.
I just say that this is a great show. I'm an avid listener.
Thank you, sir.
And you do some great interviews with your guests. But I just want to say that I've read several books. One was Slave Species of God. I think that's by Sitchin.
Mm-hmm.
And I do plan on getting Marshall's book. And I want to ask you, George, have you ever read a book called The Holy Tablets by Dr. Malachi York?
No, I have not.
Okay. Well, I sent you a text saying you need to look into it.
Okay. We will do
It mirrors a lot of the information that these guys say about the Anunnaki. And Malachi wrote this book maybe about 15 to 20 years ago. It's called The Holy Tablets.
Okay.
Great reading.
You got it.
Thank you, James.
Okay, thank you.
There you go. There's a lot of good researchers out there.
Yes, sir.
So, Marshall, what do you do next? What's on your plate?
Okay, there's lots of things on the plate. I mentioned earlier the documentary film which we're making, which will include the background, the Anunnaki were here, because I think this is an important discovery. And that documentary film hopefully will lead us into the trilogy, starting with the film, the major film, Gilgamesh 10, and then Enki, Prince of Nibiru, and then The Great Calamity, a huge anti-war movie. I believe that this story, George, is resonating on the airwaves now. The Ancient Aliens series has been magnificent. You're part of that. It really makes me proud that you're in there giving them the straight story. Sometimes they wander a little bit, but I think you've kept them straight.
I'm the Giorgio without the tall hair. Not that, that's the other one.
Hair is tall. Anyway, I think my mission from here on out, to answer your question, is to do everything I can to get this story into the next level. We're under the radar right now. I mean, it's starting to be accepted more easily, but what a major film like Titanic or the Star Wars series that Lucas did will actually bring a true story to life in the film media, which could go viral internationally and help us get the scientific community to recognize and acknowledge that the Anunnaki were here.
Let's go to Murrieta, California. Austin's with us west of the Rockies. Austin, go ahead.
My thing is I just want to know what happens if NASA finds your whaling station on Mars. You were talking about there's a whaling station on Mars where they transported the gold. What happens if NASA were to dig up some sort of clue or anything like that?
I'm really praying that they will do that, because that will reveal that what Sitchin told us was true, that it was a way station, that they were using it. There were a lot of people there, and there's supposed to be one of the ex-Anunnaki kings buried there. And there's all kinds of stuff that this Curiosity maybe will encounter. You know, our robot, Curiosity, is doing a great job. And I'm very proud. It's been put up there by the Caltech JPL labs. And somewhere in my background, I have an affinity for that. But you're right, Austin. They may turn something up, and if they do, I hope they don't cover it up this time.
What about the moon? Did the Anunnaki use the moon for anything?
Yes, yes. There's a story that Sitchin gave us that Enki and his first son, Marduk, went and spent a long time on the moon, and they created the zodiac. The 12 signs of the zodiac were created on the moon because they were able to observe from there all these star patterns, and that's where we got the zodiac from. It may have also been used as a preliminary way station before they used Mars. Mars was far enough away, and it had an atmosphere at that time. Now, the
they're discovering, Curiosity is discovering, that there was water on Mars.
Oh, yeah. Well, of course, we knew that a long time ago, Marshall.
Long time ago, yes, sir.
Let's go to Crawfordsville, Indiana. It's Randy's turn. You're on with Marshall Klarfeld. Randy, go ahead.
Yes. George, I want to congratulate you. You always have good interviews, and having Marshall on has really been interesting to listen to tonight.
Yes.
And I'm a little jealous of him, actually, knowing and talking to Dr. Linus Pauling and Zachariah Sitchin. I've read Zachariah Sitchin's books. I've not read Marshall's yet. I do plan on getting it. But I've always wondered why the Anunnaki, had they been here, why they didn't go about harvesting the gold technologically with machines or technology, as we're doing on Mars,
right,
rather than DNA manipulation to...
And slave labor, yeah.
Yeah, slave labor. It would seem like they would have the technology.
They did, Randy. They took all the equipment away with them because we haven't found any. But I agree with you. If they were doing 2 miles down in Africa, though it's Southeast Africa, when you mold it, mine gold in the deep mines, you have to have some kind of equipment or people couldn't survive down there. We use air conditioning now, sending air conditioning down 2 miles to help the miners that are now digging that gold to survive. Now, I agree with you. They must have had some equipment. In fact, many of the edifices that I write about in my books, you cannot imagine them being created without some high technology.
I mean, are we finding the 2-mile-long mine hole shafts in Africa?
They found shafts. They haven't explored how deep they went, but they were gold mining, ancient gold mining shafts that were filled up when the flood came. In other words, when the 11,000 years ago, the Great Flood filled the mines up with mud. Can you imagine the earth being covered with, say, 10 miles worth of mud? That kind of stops everything cold.
Well, you would think so.
They had to find another source, and that's when the Lake Titicaca project and Pumapunka and all those places started to happen. So it makes a continuous story, George. To me, it's logical. It follows. I have yet to find something that really doesn't fit in this puzzle, and that's why I'm so excited about the new book, because I think it's a theory that is worthy of the scientific community acknowledging and trying to prove that it's wrong.
Let's go back to New Orleans again. George is with us. Hey, George, go ahead.
Hey, George, great show tonight.
Thank you.
Marshall, I wanted to ask you if you agree with Sitchin that he was afraid of the Anunnaki. He had fear for them. And in his last book, you mentioned that he definitely was afraid of the Anunnaki. And, you know, a lot of things that tie into the Catholic religion, I'm a Catholic, one of the things I never could understand was this original sin. And when I read Genesis Revisited, and they talked about the DNA and how we were, you know, jump-started, it sunk in, you know, that's why we're born with original sin, because we're contaminated from birth with the Anunnaki DNA.
Good point.
And, you know, also the Anunnaki did not want us to reach their level of sophistication and knowledge by shortening our lifespan, by splitting up our languages when we tried to create a shim in the Tower of Babel.
Much like what the Bible says.
Right. So, you know, the Anunnaki aren't our friends, really, even though they're our creators. We would have been wiped out during the Great Flood if it would have been up to the consensus of the Anunnaki themselves. Only Enki and his sister
saved us.
Yeah, yep. They're the ones who inseminated men behind their backs.
What do you think, Marshall? Marshall? Where is Marshall? Marshall may have disappeared on us. Right, they came and got him. They took him away. The Anunnaki took Marshall away. Well, we've got a few more moments to go, so we're going to get the rest of your calls. But I will react to you, George. I think you could be absolutely right. I don't think the Anunnaki, I don't think they were Boy Scouts by any means. You know, anytime you come and manipulate whatever's on that planet to create slave labor and you want it not to be as knowledgeable as you, that means you want to control them. You want an upper edge on them, and that's probably what they were up to. I'll take a few more calls here, though. Let's go to Brian in Austin, Texas, east of the Rockies. Hey, Bri, welcome to the show.
Hey, George, this is Brian. Hey, thanks for taking my call. I wish Marshall wouldn't have disappeared.
Yeah, we may get him back before you're off, so don't worry
about it. Okay, well, correct me if I'm wrong, but heavier elements like gold are created during the fusion process inside of stars and then ejected out into the universe during supernovas. Now, those heavier elements coalesce and create the cores of planets, but they also kind of just float around and are easier to access than, say, coming here. Why did they not just go to asteroid belts or other non-populated planets to gather this gold if it was so important?
Well, you know, this planet must have been a gold mine, literally, for them. Maybe it was easier, but maybe the fact that they saw the, you know, the possibility of genetically manipulating us, maybe that's what they wanted to do, too.
It was kind of a double whammy.
Yep.
Okay. Exactly. Okay. Thanks, George.
All right. You're welcome. That's first-time caller. Russ is in Paducah, Kentucky. Russ, welcome to the program.
Thanks, George.
You're welcome.
I love your show, and I've got to say, out of all of them, I mean, I loved every one of them. This has been the best show. Thank you for answering my call.
You are welcome. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, no.
The thing about the Anunnaki, too, is people, I hope they realize there's good factions of them and there was bad factions of them. Some of them loved us very much. Some of them wanted to keep us as slaves. And I just kind of wanted to get Marshall's thought on that also. And also how Anki's son, Thoth, that is also along the lines of Drunvalel Melchizedek in his teachings.
All right, let's see if I can conjure up Marshall. Hold on, let me do a little thing.
George?
Marshall, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
See? It worked.
It worked. You're a magician.
It worked. Okay, well, his question was that the Anunnaki might have not been as great as everybody thought, but some were nice, some were not. You agree with that?
Yes, I do. Absolutely. Pete's correct on that. There were bad guys, like Marduk was really bad. He was the bad seed, George. He was firstborn of Enki, and I think he's caused a lot of trouble on our planet.
They fought with
each other.
Did they not fight with each other?
Oh, they fought all the time. There were three wars that Sitchin chronicled. And, you know, we could go on, George, in another show and fill in a lot of this stuff, because I think I'm uncovering stuff every day that's going to be added. Eventually, I'm going to produce I produce a supplement which people can get.
You know, let me ask you the story of the mythology of the Greek gods.
Yes.
Were they talking about the Anunnaki as well?
Yes, they are the same. I've traced the Greek commander god was Zeus. His brother was Poseidon, the water god. Back to the beginning of the Sumerian pantheon, you had Enlil was the commander, and Enki was his brother, his half-brother, who was the water god. You go to the Romans, George, and you get Jupiter and Neptune, the same two characters. So I believe for 6,000 years, humans had been involved in worshiping these 12 gods of the Anunnaki, only under different names.
Yeah, you may be right. Let's go to Gaitha in Apache Junction, Arizona. Hi, Gaitha.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
You are welcome.
My
glad we got
is,
you.
What is does the Nazca Lines in South America have in relation to the subject tonight?
Okay. In Peru, of course, Marshall, as you know, the Nazca Lines that Eric Von Daniken, of course, highlighted for his Chariots of the Gods. Any tie-in with any of this?
Oh, absolutely. I think that the Nazca lines were the early crop circles that we're seeing now that they can't explain. Some of them are phony, but some of them are real. And I reproduced one of them in the last page of Gilgamesh 10, which was a direct message from Enki warning us about gamma radiation. But the Nazca lines are, in fact, I've got a YouTube on that I'm going to send you, George, for your new collection on the Nazca lines. I think it's a time capsule. I think what it was a message to humanity in a time capsule format that was signed by the spider, See, the spider was not native to that part of Peru. In fact, it lived 900 miles away in the Amazon jungle, and it's so small that you could only see it under a microscope. But the reason that it was reproduced on the Nazca plane was their branding. They branded that whole artifact that's there as theirs. And that's another story that I could tell.
We'll take the last minute we have, Marshall. Mention your websites. Mention the offer you're giving us. Go ahead.
Okay. The website is Adam the Missing Link. And the offer is the first 25 orders of the hard copy of the Anunnaki We're Here will receive the 10-page supplement that I've done on Angkor Wat and the Great Wall of China. And also there's a special for the three books. You can order all three books at a reduced price. It's at the bottom of the webpage, adamthemissinglink.com. And we look forward to carrying on our conversation, George.
Marshall, would you say that all these books, these three books, are basically like a trilogy series?
Yes, sir. Yeah, it's a series. It's called The History of the Anunnaki. It starts with Adam the Missing Link. It continues with Gilgamesh 10. And this new book was just got published a week ago, believe it or not.
Well, good for you. And you know what? Old Zechariah Sitchin is probably listening in from up there now. And he's probably saying, Marshall, carry on, my friend.
Yes, I'm his disciple. I will carry on as long as I can, George.
You got it.
Thank you so much for this interview.
Thank you. Good job. You take care of yourself, all right? Marshall Klarfeld, his book, The Anunnaki Were Here. And you know what? I think they were. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Lottasour, Stephanie Smith, George Knapp, John B. Wells, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everybody.